The Reset Podcast is a show about fresh starts. In business, career, relationships, health, and life in general, sometimes we all go forward to a new square one. Every moment is a new opportunity to begin again, and my guests will tell you how, when, and why they decided to reset their lives. I'm Franklin Taggart. Welcome to The Reset Podcast. Good afternoon, morning, evening, whatever time it is that you're listening to this. This is The Reset Podcast, and I am Franklin Taggart. My guest for this podcast episode is attorney Brian Hanning. I know Brian we worked together on the planning team for Loveland Startup Week, which is now known as Made in Loveland Week. And that's how we met, right?
Yes, I believe so. Either that or we met at a Loveland Business Development or a Larimer County Business Development or one of the SBDCs.
Right on. So we just keep running into each other around town. And Brian showed up at one of my workshops at Loveland Business Development Center on podcasting a couple of months ago and got in touch and said, would you ever want to have an attorney on your show? And I thought about it and I said, well, I've never had an attorney on my show.
Which is an answer in of itself.
Well, it's, they're all busy, they're all doing their job or something,
That and they're just stuffy. Lawyers are stuffy.
Yeah, they can be, and they don't necessarily, they don't want people to know about them exactly. But in your case, we just were talking a little bit about your specialty area, and you're especially focused on doing legal work for small businesses. Tell us a little bit about how that looks like.
Yeah, it's, well, I'm going to step back slightly on that, which is one of the questions I get a lot is, oh, you're a lawyer, so you do all of the law stuff, like divorces and all. And the response is, there are 42 titles in Colorado of statutes. And that is just the base knowledge that you have to be a lawyer. Yeah. So when I'm talking to a business, I've got, four or five titles going through my mind of, oh, it's a husband and a wife. They're coming to me. They're saying, we've got this wonderful idea of a retail store. Great. So now we're talking employment, we're talking name, we're talking what happens if there's a divorce, disability, all of these things. And so when I'm talking with that small business, it really is a reset for them because they are theoretically good at business or good at art or good at the thing that they're doing.
Yeah.
Everything else around that happens.
It's a crapshoot.
Right. And so frequently what'll happen is they'll come and they'll talk to me or they'll talk to an accountant or they'll talk to someone from an SBDC and go, yeah, I'm starting this awesome business. What do I do? How do I actually run a business?
Right.
And at least legally, it's a mess. And I love it because it's, okay, we're going to take the ideas you have in your head and put them on paper and in words so that somebody else can read it and understand what they're doing. Mm-hmm.
So you just sort out the mess.
And sometimes create one. Well, and that's kind of the flippant but true answer because a lot of times people will come to me and go, oh, I've started this podcast and I'm going to have it as a big business driver. Mm-hmm. The answer's great. Have you thought about paying your editor? I need an editor. oh, you're doing a Patreon thing. Do you, you know, do you account for that appropriately as a business income?
Yeah.
And so something that they thought was simple, I see as a mess.
All of a sudden becomes complex. Yeah.
And so it's getting both parties, me and the person I'm talking to be in the same place, mm-hmm. so that we can solve those problems.
So you work with businesses at pretty much every level of engagement, people who are just starting out, people who have a concept, people who have actually taken the steps to, you know, form their business entity. And then you've got businesses that have been in, you know, around for a while, and they're, you know, maybe in a development phase or some kind of other stage. But one of the things that I'm kind of curious about is, like, what are the different ways that you see your clients reach that place where they have to kind of start again, not necessarily from where they started the first time, but where they have to, you know, come around and maybe pivot somewhat, or they go into a new direction altogether with their business?
Yeah, a lot of those... Well, I've got a couple answers here, so we're okay. just going to ramble for a bit. But there's pivots that are major, such as, you know, shutting down a business and going in a completely different direction. Mm-hmm. And I see that primarily in people who know they want to be entrepreneurs, but haven't found the business yet. Right. And so it's... I was actually talking to a gentleman not an hour ago who got out of his previous career, had a little bit of a bankroll, and has just gone through three or four different types of companies because he knows he doesn't want to go work for somebody.
Yeah.
But he just, he doesn't have a path yet.
Right.
And so he's searching. So I see a decent number of those. I tend not to engage on that.
Yeah.
For their sake. Because if I'm writing them a big $600 document, they don't want to spend that more than once.
Right.
And that can be a very important document, as in, that's my contract to how I'm getting paid. Right. So that's important, but it also is something where if they're going from podcasting to signage to sales to, you know, marijuana or whatever.
Right.
The conversation has to be more on, okay, what are you thinking about with this? Here are some pros and cons with the potential path you're taking. Mm-hmm. When I see someone more in a development phase or of an established that's pivoting, generally what's happened is either they didn't do the setup correctly, mm-hmm. or something that they thought they had prepared for, they hadn't.
Like any examples?
So for the second of the prepared but haven't, I've worked with a warehousing company. Mm-hmm. And they had an issue this summer where they weren't getting paid by their client. Not good.
No.
But the reason in part was their contract they had written themselves. They thought it covered everything. They thought it covered their right to sell the goods or to put liens on or whatever. But it was a brute force document. Okay. It was LegalZoom / I spent an hour on Google and created this.
I watched a YouTube video.
Yeah. And so what ends up happening in that is key things for that particular context fall through.
Yeah.
And so they have this bump in the road, And so their pivot is small. It's very much, okay, we need to change our customer interaction.
Yeah.
Because part of it was how we as a company interacted with the complaining customer. And part of it is, well, we didn't do a good enough job with our paperwork. So let's fix that too.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, the big one that I get somewhat frequently is friends got into business together.
Mm-hmm.
A married couple got into business together. And they take a big pivot. They may still be doing the same kind of thing.
Right.
But now one owner's gone. Divorce, friendship broke down, mm-hmm. whatever. And those are challenging for them because this is your friend, your buddy, your wife, your husband, and you can't work with them.
I've been there. Yeah. That's happened a couple of times.
Yeah. Because we all go into business with the best expectations and the best hopes.
Yeah.
And then life turns around and goes,
sorry. Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, all too often that does happen now, doesn't it? I'm kind of curious, for your own career path, did you always want to be an attorney, or were there other plans that kind of led you in a different direction?
Well, I went into undergrad here at Colorado State University, having just moved here from St. Louis, mm-hmm. going, I'm 16, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Maybe I was 17, I don't know. I was a young buck.
Yeah.
And now, here I am, 15 years later, going, I still have no idea. But no, I went into school going, I know I'm smart. I know I'm probably going to go to a grad program. I'm pretty sure I don't want to go into the medical field.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll just go into the business school. That yeah. seems broad enough. That'll cover me. And what ended up happening is I took a class called employment law
mm-hmm.
by a gentleman by the name of Ray Hoegler. And he was and is an attorney and practicing arbitrator, mm-hmm. arbiter. So he goes around and legally binds decisions for companies in a more private context.
Right.
And through his class, I just fell in love with the law.
Oh, wow.
And because I was a giant nerd. Which helped because then I had a senior thesis, which he was my thesis advisor on.
Mm-hmm.
And we went in and I analyzed a decision. And I forget the exact name of it, but it was the New Haven firefighters out of Connecticut mm-hmm. suing about promotion testing.
Oh, wow.
So it was, if you think about your fire or police, you have captains, lieutenants, etc., and there's tests to get promoted. So they had gone through that testing with this third-party company who was like, oh, you'll be fine. There's no discrimination issues here at all. And they come out the other end, and like three black guys and a Hispanic woman passed
yeah.
out of this entire thing. And so the fire department was going, we can't have that. That's terrible. And it went up to the Supreme Court.
Oh, wow.
And so I basically interpreted that case for my senior thesis.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed every minute of it. I enjoyed wow. reading the case. I enjoyed reading the background. I enjoyed writing about it. And then I went, well, we're in the middle of this great recession thing. There's not really jobs. You know what? I'm going to go to law school, and when I come out, there's going to be a bunch of law jobs available.
Yeah.
It, you know, 4 years later, I'm sitting there going, oh, I forgot about all this technology stuff, which has changed our law firms from 100 people minimum to 50 people. And
yeah.
Yeah. So it's, that's kind of been my path of, I started with businesses, fell in love with small business, fell in love with law, and then came back and went, who can I help? I can help small businesses. I can help them build something.
Yeah. And you can build your own small business.
Coincidentally, yes.
Yeah.
Not planned.
Yeah, you were going to work for someone else all along.
I was thinking of it because, you know, they call it the practice of law for a reason. In law school, they teach you evidence, criminal procedure, civil procedure, criminal law, constitutional law, and contracts.
Yeah.
That's what's on the bar. So if you want to walk out of law school and walk into a courtroom, you know at least a third of what you need to know. If you're lucky.
And that may not be enough.
Right. And so being a lawyer is being perpetually in the state of, I know the answer because I know where to look it up.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you because I don't know.
Well, one area of small business that I have a near and dear to my heart kind of relationship with is working with artists and creative folks. And in our conversation before, you mentioned that you're a volunteer for the Colorado Attorneys for the Arts. Tell us a little bit about that organization and a little bit about your involvement in it.
Yeah, so the Colorado Attorneys for the Arts is a subset of the Colorado Business Development Center, or some other C word at the end. And what they do is they are, CAFTA in particular, is looking at trying to integrate attorneys with artists. The bigger mission of the organizations in general is to use art as economic development to a degree. Because as we know, the stone for a sculpture is not cheap.
No, it's not.
And a lot of artists are capital A artists. They paint, they sculpt, they tell story through what they do. Not business people.
They're not primarily.
They're not lawyers. They're not accountants. And they're not even marketers for the most part. And so they'll run up against things like, hey, we're doing an installation for City of Wellington. How do we make sure that contract actually gets me paid? / Do I still own how the sculpture looks and all of those kinds of things?
Yeah.
I'm starting to work with a company that was a film studio, and they, you know, go out and do documentaries. And so it's, how do you make sure everyone on film has given the right to be on film, and how do you distribute it, and how do you do all of these things?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember one of the most recent, the last CAFTA engagement I did was with a young man out of Denver who was doing a recording studio and doing sound engineer work. And he's going, do I charge royalties? How do I get those royalties if I do?
Yeah.
Right? And so a lot of it's talking people through you know, like we mentioned earlier with the business owners, they think it's this nice, simple, straightforward thing. You come to me, I'm going to mix your sound. Yes, sound mixing is a complicated thing, but, you know, I know how to do it.
Yeah.
And here we are as professionals sitting on the other end going, yeah, but have you heard about? But if any of your listeners are interested, go to CAFTA.org, CAFTA.org. I believe it's $50 to apply.
Okay.
If you are admitted to the program as an artist, they will strip out identifying information and just take the small story. Mm-hmm. Like, person just started recording studio, needs recording contract.
Yeah.
And they'll blast it to the emails of attorneys all over the state.
Right.
So you may be connected as a person from Durango with an attorney in Fort Collins just because of who has time and all of that.
Yeah.
From there, if the attorney has, or if the attorneys have time, interest and competency,
yeah,
they'll reply back to CAFTA, and then CAFTA goes, great, make sure you don't have conflicts. And then it spuns out from there, and then it's a general, so I understand you're looking for this.
Yeah. Well, I know one of the areas that artists are particularly concerned with is intellectual property. And I always am telling people that they need to have an attorney look over their intellectual property agreements, their licensing agreements, and things like that. Because that's usually the place where artists are more likely to get taken than anywhere else.
What I find is a lot of artists don't want to register with the government.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. And no judgment on that. However, if you apply and get your piece of art registered with the Copyright Office, mm-hmm, it's $80. And if it's for you, it is for the life of the artist plus 30 years.
I thought it was maybe 75.
70. Yeah. It doesn't matter. So if you live to 100, you can get like 200 years of protection. And if you're selling it and it's a work made for hire,
yeah,
that work is 100 years.
Okay.
It is $80.
Yeah.
It's
just, yes, get it done.
Have an attorney do it. We're more expensive than it's worth. Just do it yourself.
Right.
Because you're then protected for 100 years. You can go out and sue people and get licenses and all of that for 100 years.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Licensing is, it's interesting, mm-hmm, because at its core, it's just a contract.
Right.
I have this thing. You want this thing, and you're willing to pay for it.
Right.
On the other hand, we're now trying to define the painting of the woman in blue with an earring, but it's a hoop, not a dangly earring. And it's one of a series, all of the same woman. And we've titled it Woman in Blue 3.
With dangly earrings.
Right. And so making sure we identify what the specific thing being provided,
yeah,
can be interesting.
I know a lot of people who do particularly like image-based art, like painting and photography and things like that. One of the things that they never were prepared for is this explosion of digital media. And so they had all of these different ways that things could be, you know, they could be licensed for print, but that the print licensing that they did 20 years ago had nothing to do with digital licensing. And so now what they're finding is they go online and they find their work. And there's nothing that is saying that people can't take it.
Generally, well, Congress, the federal Congress passed an act in the 2000s mm-hmm. called the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Right.
So when you get all of these people complaining on YouTube about being demonetized or their videos being taken down,
yeah,
what happened is a studio paid attention and then told YouTube, hey, you know this law that exists. There's a loophole-ish safe harbor for the websites, essentially.
Right.
Where some user uploaded copyrighted things, YouTube or Google or whoever says, I didn't know.
Yeah.
That's the user's job. And so when a studio or a copyright holder comes and gives them a takedown thing, they just do it.
Yeah.
It's bad for creators, but it's also good for creators.
Yeah.
Because you can literally go to any website, go through their digital takedown, and they most likely will do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's also one of those things where copyright is both too long and not protected enough.
Right.
Because it's 100 years.
Yeah.
Our first entry into the public domain in about 30 years is January 1st.
Yeah.
We're just getting The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I think that's coming out this year. I'd have to double check, but
in the public domain?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Things from 1920 are just starting to come out.
Right.
So those are just starting to be available again. But who hasn't watched The Wizard of Oz on, you know, some torrent site?
Yeah.
I mean, you had access.
Well, it's been around everywhere for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that may not be a great example, but I mean, the law moves slowly.
Yes, it does.
I mean, so in 2015, the conversation was, oh my goodness, gay marriage is moving so quickly. And you're like, oh yeah, as a lawyer, I completely see that. The first time it reached the Supreme Court was the 1980s. It's been 30 years and we're finally making another decision on it. Yeah.
That's fast.
That's lickety split.
For the government, absolutely.
Artists are looking at us going, but the internet.
Yeah, but the internet, right. Yeah, I think that we all have to just, you know, we all have to. I think the internet is both a great empowerment tool, and it's also a great challenge for most creative people. We still haven't figured out how to navigate it, and it changes every day.
And I think that's true for basically every profession.
Yeah.
I mean, the one I get directly related to my profession is, what about this blockchain stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And also, what about that LegalZoom stuff? And the answer is both, I have no idea. We'll find out in 10 years. And yeah, that's cheaper than me, but you're getting what you pay for.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. The internet is such a blessing in I can send you a draft today of a document. And you can mark it up and go, I really have no idea what's going on in this paragraph. Can we have a call about that? Can we, you know, I'm an artist. You've spoken legalese down here. What does a work for hire mean?
Yeah.
For me.
Define that, please. Yeah.
Or, you know, copyright terms or whatever. And that communication can happen very quickly.
Yeah.
And asynchronously. So when somebody's between stuff, responses. On the other hand, the expectation now is, hey, give me that thing by Tuesday.
Yeah.
You do know that thing you're talking about involves four of these books.
Yeah.
And it's going to be 20 pages.
Yeah, everybody wants it, and they want it immediately. Yeah. Well, let's shift gears completely.
Okay.
And last time I saw you in person, you were volunteering for Comic-Con in Fort Collins.
Yes.
And have you been a part of that that whole thing since it started, or is this something that you're new to?
I do a decent amount of volunteering.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's even in my profession, but most of it's not.
Yeah.
I've volunteered with them 2 of their 3 years. Because I think they're 3 years old.
Yeah, this was the third.
Yeah. And so I was there last year and this year. I'm talking with Nick Armstrong, who's one of the lead organizers,
yeah,
to step up and see if I can help organize the next one.
Good.
I love that event less because it's Comic-Con and more because I like their mission,
yeah,
which is let's raise all of the money for the library.
Yeah. To date, they've raised $95,000.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And I mean, I would completely credit the library where I grew up as one of the reasons I was able to become an attorney.
Yeah.
Because it allowed me to read.
Yeah.
And, you know, I, like many other people, read fast. In fact, I read fast enough that it doesn't make sense to buy all of the books I read. So, read a lot, go to your library.
Yeah. Well, I'm thrilled with the event. We had such a good time this year, and the team was phenomenal. They really put together a wonderful event, and it's just growing every year. It's exciting to see.
It's going to be a lot of fun to see what they do next year.
Yeah.
Because they're drawing so many people from the area and from further away.
Yeah.
That, you know, space is an issue.
Yeah.
How do you get 5 food trucks around this one building? Yeah, it's a big building, but half that space is parking.
Yeah, we only want one door to go to the food trucks. We don't want all the doors to go to the food trucks.
We need to get rid of the line somehow.
Yeah. Well, that was a lot of folks. I know they were talking that the attendance was up in the 3,000 range, I think.
Yeah.
And that's really a remarkable thing to fit that many people in with that many vendors in one place.
Well, and Fort Collins Comic-Con is one of the most cost-effective vending spaces.
Yeah.
A lot of the vendors in bigger places like Denver charge exorbitant prices.
Yeah.
And this is wonderful for local people to demonstrate to their neighbor, here's what I do.
Yeah. I have one last question for you.
Okay.
This
I have four answers.
All right, man, I'll take them. The thing that comes to my mind is that if you were a last year law student again, and you knew that you were not going to be working for a big firm somewhere, and you knew that you were going to be going in the small business direction, what would you suggest to that law student in terms of what you've learned thus far in starting your own private practice?
Be aware that starting your law firm is just the same as every other business.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you're the best lawyer around. It doesn't matter if you're the best artist. It doesn't matter if you're the best vet. It doesn't. Being the best is irrelevant. What matters most is reputation and community.
Mm-hmm.
The reason Coca-Cola got so big is they have a reputation for terrible but delicious drinks. And they live up to that reputation every day.
Yeah.
And they've built a community of followers who love Coca-Cola. Mm-hmm. That same principle applies all the way down to your friendly neighborhood tea shop. Happy Lucky's has a reputation for having a lot of different types of teas.
Yeah.
And being a quiet place to go talk to people.
Yeah.
They've built that. They've cultivated it. It took them a while to introduce what they are. Being a lawyer is not a new profession.
Right.
Some say it's, you know,
the second oldest.
Second oldest. You know, it's almost the same as the oldest, though. It's, you know, an old profession because yeah. people have always been in conflict, and those conflicts haven't always devolved into swords, spears, knives, daggers, rocks, etc. Sometimes they still do.
Yeah.
And lawyers exist in part to help resolve those conflicts in one of many, many ways.
Yeah.
And so opening up a law firm is opening a business. It is, hi, my name's Brian Hanning. I own Hanning Law Limited. Mm-hmm. I help small businesses. I help them go from startup to tune-up.
Yeah.
And I help them by establishing trust. Mm-hmm. That's how I introduced myself to the grocery store clerk. I mean, owning a small business is wonderful. You set your own hours, you have a wonderful commute, and it's terrible. I have law school debt. How am I going to pay that this month?
Yeah.
Oh, all of my insurance renewals came up this month. I'm finally getting big enough to just about be able to hire somebody. Yeah. Oh, how do I manage people? You have to be ready for that and want to do it.
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't think that's unique to lawyers.
I don't think it is either.
A universal thing. If you want to start a business, 50% of them go out of business their first year.
Yeah.
70% go out of business by year 5.
Yep.
Another one goes out by year 10, if I'm remembering the numbers right.
It's about right.
I haven't seen Mike's slides for a while.
From SBDC.
Yeah. Owning a business is hard.
It is.
It's very rewarding, though. Mm-hmm. Because you get to do what you say you want to do.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm an author. I'm owning my own writing career.
Yeah.
I'm getting paid to write. This is awesome. Oh, but it's going to take me 6 months to write this book. And then another 3 months until I get a check on it. Okay, how do I plan this business for that sales cycle?
Yeah.
I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Yeah.
I would trade it for a 6-figure salary on Hawaii.
No, if any of the listeners here know of an opportunity for an attorney, 6 figures in Hawaii, get in touch with Brian.
You know, benefits, really nice. Take a while as a small business owner to get.
Well, back when we were talking about Comic-Con, we were talking about Nick Armstrong. And I know for your own website that it's almost like you took a page out of the Nick Armstrong book of marketing.
He might be who I got to make my website.
Oh, I wondered. So Nick has a company called WTF Marketing. And Brian's website is thatdamnlawyer.com. I like it.
You know, it speaks to a lot of things. Including the fact that attorneys just suck, man. I'm putting together a presentation, and I don't know if this will be posted by then or not, but I'm presenting to 1 million Cubs in Fort Collins on October 3rd.
Okay. This one will be up before then.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
So go there. Come see me again. I'm not boring.
Where are they meeting now?
The Articulate at the corner of Linden and Jefferson.
Oh, very cool.
And so I'm putting together my slide deck ahead of time. And so I have this bar graph from the Court Statistics Project. Mm-hmm. The most expensive type of litigation that they have in this bar graph is malpractice.
Oh, wow.
Because when you're suing an attorney, it takes money.
Yeah, I'll bet. I'll bet it does, man. That's crazy. So that'll be October 3rd?
Yep.
At the Articulate in Fort Collins.
At 9 a.m.
And will there be information on your website about that event?
You can find information about it on LinkedIn at my site. So if you go on LinkedIn and search Brian Hanning, you can see my nice smiling face.
We'll put a link in the description for the show.
Yep. And you can also get it on Meetup and go through launchno.co or just search 1 million cups.
1 million cups.
There's ones for it all over the place. There's one for Fort Collins.
Awesome. Well, that sounds like a great presentation. And will you be making the slides available on SlideShare or anything like that?
I don't know, maybe.
After the presentation's over?
It's clip art. It's terrible.
Oh, okay. Well, you know.
Yeah, it'll probably go up somewhere.
Well, if you get it up on SlideShare, let us know and we'll include a link to that at some point too. But this has been a lot of fun, Brian. I've enjoyed talking with you, and thanks for putting the bug in my ear about having an attorney on the show.
You know, people don't like talking to attorneys, but we're really helpful.
Yeah. They're really great to have around when you need them.
Before you need them.
Yes, indeed.
Before.
Yeah. It was like there's preventive attorneys and there's a triage kind of a deal, right?
There's the ones that go after the president and they get paid the big bucks. There's the ones that protect O.J. Simpson and they get paid even bigger bucks.
Well, they're also the brand behind LegalZoom, so, you know.
Yeah. And then there's those of us who help with the planning, like, oh, yeah, I am mortal and do need a will. We're expensive, but we're not that expensive.
All right. Well, one last time, your website. Tell folks where to find you.
Yeah. Find me online at www.thatdamnlawyer.com.
All right.
You can email me at brian@thatdamnlawyer.com or call me at thatdamnlawyer.com.
All right, man. Thanks for taking the time to listen to, subscribe, and review the Reset Podcast. The Reset Podcast features interviews, insights, and in-depth reflections that will help you navigate your own fresh start. If you'd like to be a guest or share an idea for a topic you'd like to hear about, please contact podcast@franklintaggart.com. I offer a wide range of services to people who are ready to live with clear direction, new possibilities, greater freedom, and unlimited creativity. If you're looking for a new beginning, I'm available to help you. More information is available at franklintaggart.com. The Reset Podcast is a production of Franklin Taggart and Make Your Own Way Media. All rights reserved.